Hello, strangers, and welcome to the January 30th edition of the Strange Horizons Poetry Podcast. I'm your host, Ciro Faenza, and we have two poems for you this week, both of which read by their respective poets. First up is In Memoriam Maureen K. Speller by Catherine Lockwood. Catherine Lockwood, she, they, reads and edits for Reckoning magazine. Her poetry chapbook, Endeavors to Obtain Perpetual Motion, is available from the Ethelzine Press. Another mini chapbook, And We Are Far From Shore, Poems for Our Flag Means Death, will be published by Ethel in 2023. They have reviewed books and occasionally TV for Strange Horizons since 2015. And now, the poems.
In Memoriam, Maureen K. Speller by Catherine Lockwood. I would have liked to ask for your opinion of sheep and horses as embodiments of thought signals in the work of Connie Willis, Warm Instruments for the Cold News of Loss. Most likely you'd have questioned the premise, done it well and kindly, then moved on, watching as from the sky some alteration in the landscape of one mind before you flew further, wider, winging to the next contref or county whose confused traffic and milling herds required your raptor guidance. I wish you good flight, clear and fast and far, still fascinated as you always were by how much could be gathered out of air.
Once again, that was In Memoriam Maureen K. Speller by Catherine Lockwood. Next up is In Review by Strange Horizons editor Romy Stott. Romy Stott is the administrative editor and a poetry editor of Strange Horizons. Her poems have appeared in Ink Scrawl, Dreams and Nightmares, Polutexny, On Spec, The Deadlands, and Liminality. But she is better known for her essays in The Toast and Atlas Obscura, and a microfiction project called Postorbital. As a filmmaker, she has been a guest artist of National Gallery, London, the Institute of Contemporary Art, Boston, and the Dallas Museum of Art. You can find her fairly complete blog at romysays.tumblr.com.
In Review by Romy Stott. Assembled using text from Review's editor Maureen Kincaid Speller's writing published in Strange Horizons between 2006 and 2022 as a posthumous tribute. This is not an exhaustive survey. Even though it is about a child, it doesn't fit comfortably with our current understanding, like a treasure hunt, the noonday train seen but never heard. And what else passes once a day? The sun. For a critic, going against the prevailing opinion on a text is fraught with danger. To disagree is to worry that perhaps your critical faculties are at fault. It is uncomfortable to be out of step with everyone else, and yet you have to say what you see. The questions should always be, what is this piece of fiction doing? Does it work? And if not, why not? Everything else unfolds from that, until they reach a hillock where the hoofprints stop. Half threat, half promise, like fish hooks caught in the mind, resurfacing during quiet moments, a search for wholeness or reconciliation in the ruins. We understand from the beginning that this idyll cannot continue. Weather patterns are changing, and the community itself is finally overwhelmed by a huge storm. The plan is built on dreams which cannot be economically sustained. Journeys across unmapped terrain in the company of an avatar of death, which transforms her into a black angel, waiting for something without being clear what it is she is waiting for, why this stillness is so necessary. I speak as someone who is entirely happy to skip to the end of a novel if things are getting tense, to reassure myself that X survives, to have the freedom to talk about the whole of the book, to learn how collaborative the business of creating, that ability to detach oneself. We're all building on what has gone before, no longer civilians, but vital in maintaining the security of hearth and home, moving in ones and twos in the chinks of the SF writing machine. How do we come to terms with grief so overwhelming it strips us of the means to function at even a most basic level? Grief so overwhelming it is like a never-ending storm, rain pouring down constantly, the sky too dark to see clearly. Houses are built up the steep sides of the hill, leaving nowhere else to go. Everyone knows everyone else. Everyone knows. The much-discussed but vaguely defined cozy catastrophe. They inhabit a world which is cobbled together, the gleaming and new jostling for position alongside the old and worn. It's also a playful world. As the pace of life moves faster, the assimilation is quicker, and mostly unremarked on. The letter written but not read, read but not answered, or read by another person, the wrong person. It remains a liminal thing, potent yet inert. The intended recipient will never, ever, with one exception, read the letter. So much not known, so much to be said. Encounters with the pale lady, blessed with an inquiring turn of mind, sensitive to the impressions left by the use of magic, and somehow it is not quite enough. I find myself beginning to wonder if being a writer isn't in some ways not dissimilar to being a con artist, to appear as normal as possible in order to counteract people's expectations. It is the speed of the transition, the compression of that shift, having apparently sleepwalked there while dreaming about a white cat. How are we supposed to respond? Scandalized by the brawling antics of the god family, we apparently forgive the divine, the insistent thud of the basketball bouncing rhythmically on the court. It was left to the online community to collate information and coordinate a response. The online community turned to unconventional sources of information. For mavericks, they are all terribly well-behaved. Presence of the machine gods, a child raised among ghosts, wordplay for breaching the rules. This is the dream speaking, not the conscious human being. A fluid landscape with no shape, no names. Indeed, change is on its way, though not in the dramatic fashion. A blank tablet awaiting some sort of revelation. All along, things must have been changing, imperceptibly slowly, and everyone has misgivings about the voyage. While information has undeniably been lost along the way, the implication seems to be that much of it survives. Such things could also be happening just around the corner, riven with nostalgia for a lost bucolic ideal, the boundaries between the two dissolving, the fantastic spilling over, an undertone of special pleading, providing a physical home for spirits desperate to be reborn, allows them to map one another close to the huge cremation ovens. Why would she leave? A small group of people, working together, constantly adjusting to the new conditions around them, improvising, adapting, patched together at crazy angles. The goo in the cavern making families out of lost souls, the kind of character that turns up in Ealing comedies and their clones. There are protocols involved in being a superhero as well. A middle-aged white woman, twice married, no kids. There is a flavor of uncertain courtship about the whole thing, putting theoretical complications onto something which is really just two blokes in a bar being companionable. And there are so many other silences here, creating a private narrative. That narrative is also much more layered than we might initially realize. Indeed, do we ever realize its full extent? There's a lot of incipient wish fulfillment in this. Not a thing in itself, and therefore cannot be lost, isn't actually the fundamental weakness. An assumption that if you remove the people or establish a distance, they're not real. You focus less on the recovery and far more on the consequences, moved around by events, the emotional toll exacted by the situations. The Renaissance is clearly over. There's no new space opera, no widescreen Baroque. See this shift in emphasis, this relaxation of border controls, many jump cuts, a constant shifting of viewpoint. It touched so often on things I know a little about, and I was nodding, ticking things off in my mind, thinking, of course. The veiled childhood of the saint. Exceedingly veiled. How well she built her alliances, to test the boundaries of such a carefully constructed society. There is a buzz about. This recounting of lineage makes for a formal beginning. Everyone carries a mark to indicate the precise degree of their status, so determined to do what seems right, invested with what I suppose we must call humanity. Raw edges showing, tiny loose threads hanging here and there, odd moments of untidiness. I find it very difficult to envisage where this story can go next. Whether collection means just that, a series of stories that happen to have been brought together. That is, should we expect to see a connection beyond the fact that they are written by the same author? And what sort of connections might we expect to see? And that, bearing in mind that each of us as readers finds our own connections anyway, fold around themselves, move back and forth in time, writing with white ink, i.e. milk, the evocation of panic. Ancient is also a corruption of ensign, which is a military title, which carries with it an underlying meaning of flag bearer, which brings us back to the idea of signaling an entry. But what kind of arrival? There suggests that there is a place to go. Like a storm that's been through overnight.
The world is simply happy to consume and, you know, disinclined to engage, suggesting that parts of the ecosystem are rather weak at the moment.
The question is how we rage.
It's almost as though we need a format that hasn't actually been invented yet, but which will be completely perfect when it does turn up. None of these things exists in isolation, but just because we can't see how they all join together doesn't mean they don't somewhere, in some way, link to one another. And the question is, do we actually want to find a way of making those intersections more immediately visible? Accepting it may actually be impossible to achieve, but the journey is the interesting part of the endeavour.
The tradition of telling ghost stories at Christmas is not necessarily a global one, the telling of midwinter ghost stories a thing I have taken for granted. A certain kind of ghost story, the antiquarian ghost story. I still love the antiquarian ghost story best. There remains this sense that women's supernatural writing continually requires attention to be drawn once again to its existence, told to a group of snowbound railway passengers. The narrator, who remains at a slight distance from the main social group, the elaborate indoor garden, stiff-necked refusal to admit that anything has happened. And if the ghosts are more democratic, then perhaps so too are the writers. To read the story, then the commentary, and then the story again. I don't recall seeing this format used before, but I certainly found it incredibly effective. The sense of anxiety increased. I was struck by what I missed at the time, in terms of the stories I didn't read, and the messages I perhaps internalized but couldn't articulate, at least not until much later. There was another way, and while it wasn't all fun, beautiful frocks, and parental approval, it was equally valid and worth pursuing. It is invidious to single out favorites, but having already hinted...
Go around the museum with a friend, or the art gallery with a friend, and looking at things. Interplay of trust and the critical eye. As we all know, things change, people spend some time with us, they move on, fantastically dynamic.
I was a young adult in the late 1970s, early 1980s, and I genuinely believed that I would not get as far as my 30s, because the threat, real or imagined, of nuclear war loomed so large in my life. I knew my chances of survival were poor, doubly so because of my gender. As I once searched for representations of women like me, so other groups search for representations of people like them. Women must inevitably struggle and fail, unless they surrender to the masculine imperative and are placed safely within the confines of the house. But as she grows older, she is the one who thinks clearly, compelled to make recompense by becoming a nurse, repairing and painting the buildings, even though all around her is chaos. Life is hard, yet she seems to have embraced her destiny. The harshness of women's lives is brought into the open, subject to the vagaries of a harsh way of life, which snatches away happiness in an entirely arbitrary fashion. If not a sugar-sweet happy ending, then a decent and believable resolution to their sufferings. Unicorns are famous for being catchable only by virgins, but that episode with the smashing of the jug, with what seems to be love's young dream, on the brink of more mobility, stripped of timber for charcoal, climbing Maokop to get stone for the grindstones. They are trapped in and escape from a tower, the fairies leaving England, half acknowledgement that something has happened while alighting the detail. The most distinctive thing for me must be the absence of Arthur himself, but also the presence of his absence. His landscape is somehow all those things simultaneously. It's also something else I can't quite reach, to puncture an accepting complacency that had developed. Remembering can become institutionalized or formalized in certain ways that in themselves become a form of forgetting, whether relationships work through forgetting as well as through remembering. Who guards the entrance to that other world, weaving the two together? A ghostly airship, sorting and discarding to a pattern that isn't available to those who are part of it. Now attempting to deal with the utterly unknowable. Untested therapies of dubious merit, desperate for a breakthrough that never comes. Another layer of world. First light, an astronomical term, referring to the first reading taken with a new telescope to see the fantastic alongside the real. To say that something shouldn't be in a place is to suggest that its landscape should be immutable. Left to itself, a landscape changes in small ways, day by day, and over time, larger transformations will occur. The woman made of flowers. Type the name into a search engine to see if it existed. Of course I did. Keep an eye out for the box of artifacts, asking who is actually entitled to pull back that curtain. The critical mind must surely ask questions that don't have a straightforward answer. On her deathbed, it is an extraordinary record of a deeply private, intimate moment. For all this is a genuine painting of a dead woman, the scene has nonetheless been carefully arranged to create a certain effect. The painting presents us with a scene of calmness, dignity, restraint. We live but a short span on this earth, and are doomed like the flower to wither and die, vanished without a trace, although the mountain's name stands as a memorial. Let us strip away the academic pretense, the endnotes, the letters, the scholarly explanations. In the moments before one dies, one's entire life supposedly flashes before one's eyes. This is far from the truth. In fact, it is a moot point. In an instant, time is nonetheless subjectively altered after the terrible exactitude of that death. Perhaps it is the presence of the weeds. I was disappointed by the ending, I can't deny, and mourn for the lost possibilities.
And this has been the January 30th edition of the Strange Horizons Poetry Podcast in tribute to Maureen Kincaid Speller. Maureen Kincaid Speller was by turns SF critic and copy editor, often all in the space of one day. She reviewed SFF for Vector, Interzone, and Foundation, among other places. She also blogged intermittently at paperknife.maureenkincaidspeller.com. She lived with Paul Kincaid in what the weather forecasters persisted in calling the extreme southeast of the UK, and owned three cats with strong views on the timing of breakfast. We hope you like what you heard. You can leave a message in the comments section at the top of the page. And until next time, stay safe and stay strange.